live cast thanks to our tech crew, John Garrity, Randy Benson's here, Joe Green, Carl Chatsky, and Ralph Cole have been helping us. We've also been recording it, and it'll be available later on DVD. Ralph Cole, I don't know, but probably brought some DVDs of past events with him and some copies. I forgot to mention about Oliver Stone that he's going to do a 10-part series on Showtime about a topic of interest to me, the hidden history of America, because I've been working for the last 3 years to create a museum of hidden history in Washington, D.C., at the heart of the beast and where all the lies are told, to keep alive this hidden history that we've unearthed over these years, and I think it's going to be lost if we don't do something for it. And then also later, I did mention, but both Friday and Saturday night, we have movie night over at the Hotel Lawrence at 10 o'clock for your night owls, and we play DVDs and different things that people choose. If you'll forbear with me one more minute, I really liked Jim's talk, and I thought it hits the heart of what's not being said about the Nunes of the assassination and the why, but he started off talking about satyagraha, the principle that truth can overcome violence. And some of you know this about me, but I wrote a hip-hop. It looked like I wrote a hip-hop. I don't have all the moves down, but I did write a hip-hop. And I do it in the schools in D.C., and it's called Satyagraha Hip-Hop. Now, I know you think you're tough, but you better keep your distance if you're dealing with a brother who knows nonviolent resistance. Dr. King, he had more power in his one little finger. Whatever you let loose pulling on that trigger, you'd be bragging about your juice, dissing everybody, laughing, ha-ha. You won't be smiling long, you run into Satyagraha. Now, I really don't think that you're getting the whole picture. But you see it soon enough, I have to get nonviolent with you. Violence get back violence every minute, every hour. But that cycle going to end when it come up against truth power.
Amen.
The question loudly, we'll probably have to repeat it for the sake of the recording. Jim doesn't hear all that well, but we'll try and get through it.
Okay.
Take a question.
Okay.
Yeah, Jim.
I become friends with John McAdams. He has a list of questions that he wanted me to ask you. No, I'm just kidding.
That's part of Satyagraha.
Here's some comments. You talked about the quote by Truman in December of 1963, and you said it kind of sunk without a trace. Not quite. In January, Alan Dulles went to Truman and visited him and tried to get him publicly to retract that statement, which is very interesting because he's on the Warren Commission at this time in January 1964. Okay, and I think you said, you know, Alan Dulles actually said that Kennedy, he actually thought he was president. Okay, after he was dead. Okay.
Amen.
Okay. Okay, the third thing, you're talking about the Pentagon versus JFK at the missile crisis. And you talked about what LeMay was saying after JFK was gone. And I'm sure you know why the tape was there, right? Because he thought that they had all lied to the press about what really happened during the Bay of Pigs. So now he wanted to get them on tape so they couldn't lie again after the missile crisis. And he said afterwards, well, one thing about those guys, if I listen to them, there'll be nobody to argue with when the Holocaust comes, you know? And the last thing, when he was preparing for his trip to see Sukarno, he asked Alan Dulles for the CIA file, and he gave them a redacted version of the file. Okay, but there was enough in it that he could read it, and he said, no wonder this guy doesn't like us. We tried to overthrow his government. Okay?
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thank you. Jim, could you repeat again about President Truman's column in the Washington Post, December 22nd, 63? So you're telling me that it only lasted as long as the early edition until somebody probably made some phone calls?
Well, the question is, what happened to that column, that statement that President Truman made that was published in the December 22, 1960, the Washington Post? It vanished. There's a researcher who who discovered it sometime later, and he did as much research as he could to try to find out where it was, where it appeared after this early edition of the Washington Post. Well, it didn't appear in any further edition of the Washington Post, nor anybody, any place else. Zero. That's what the researcher could discover. What happened? Well, Lisa's got an idea on that.
Well, I was just going to say, I stumbled across this recently where,
yes,
in later years, somebody said it wasn't really Truman who wrote that. It was one of his aides who wrote it using Truman's name. And, you know, as we all know, Harold Truman was alive at the time. And if that was not his statement, he would have been the first to come forward and say, that's not what I believe. So interesting how they try and whitewash that in different ways.
Right. And as Jim was saying, he resisted Dulles when Dulles tried to get him to statement.
And there was nothing else in the press going on at that time that would have given rise to those comments. The only thing that had happened besides
the assassination
of DM a month earlier.
Right after the assassination of John Kennedy, there's Truman saying, you know, the CIA is casting a shadow over our history. One month to the day. And then it's like, you know, I knocked over my host.
We'll be friends someday.
Yes, sir. Please.
Good. Two things. One, you mentioned about the proposal to change the moon race to be a cooperative effort.
Yes.
You can't find that on NASA's website, not surprisingly. And it was the UN speech the first place where this floated, or had it been...
No, he said it back in 61. I mean, he was already proposing this to Khrushchev in 61. And he proposed it repeatedly. He was intent on getting the missile technology together so that they couldn't be using it as rockets. But Khrushchev... In just a week or two before the assassination, Sergei is quite emphatic about this. He had changed his mind. And Kennedy has a national security memorandum on this subject simultaneously with that. Now, either he's awfully intuitive or they were communicating. Sergei said he didn't know of any official communication.
Because I think they should have left an Earth flag instead. The other question is tangential. Have you looked at John Paul the First? What happened to him?
Have I looked at John Paul the First?
The Pope.
Well, yeah, I know the book on John Paul the First and what he might have done, and he only lasted a month, as folks who remember him would recall. I've read the work, and I think it's interesting. I'm not a researcher into John Paul the First, and I am into John the 23rd.
Yes.
And he was amazing. And I didn't mention him tonight, but he was the mediator between Khrushchev and Kennedy at the height of the missile crisis. He made a public appeal. Of course, we didn't hear about it in this country. But he made a public appeal, a global public appeal, after checking with both of them on how he could say it in a way that would truly mediate them. And Khrushchev said afterwards that Pope John the 23rd's words were the most hopeful thing he experienced at that point in the missile crisis. That gave him a huge amount of hope. And then John the 23rd became a kind of unofficial spiritual advisor to these two guys, one in Moscow and one in Washington. And when he issued he was dying at the time, he had cancer, and they knew he was dying, and especially Khrushchev. Khrushchev loved Pope John the 23rd. And John the 23rd, he issued this incredible papal statement that's the background to the American University Address, has the same kinds of themes in it. And the first person to receive a copy of that, first person in the world outside the Vatican is who? Nikita Khrushchev, in Russian translation, was handed a copy of that a couple weeks before it was published by Norman Cousins. He said, the Pope wants you to have this. Khrushchev could not believe he was being given that, and he went through it with Norman Cousins, and then Cousins said, I've got something else for you, put on his neck, the papal medal from the Pope to Khrushchev. So when Norman Cousins left from visiting Khrushchev, and Khrushchev had this papal medal on, he walks into the next office to a meeting with his, you know, all his commissars and everybody. He's going like this. Nobody says anything. He takes it off and he drops it on the floor. And finally somebody says, what's that? He says, oh, it's only a medal from the Pope. So when Cousins came back and met with him again, Khrushchev told him this story with glee, and Cousins went back and told it to Kennedy, and Kennedy smiled at Cousins. He said, you know, there are some things that Chairman Khrushchev can do that I can't do. I can't brag about my medal from the Pope. He didn't get one. Khrushchev did. But that's the kind of undercurrent there was at the time. There was hope that we would move. I mean, we in a big sense would move in a different direction. And a lot of people felt that, even here in the U.S., that when Kennedy went out west on a so-called conservation tour, he talked about conservation, and he mentioned that, you know, the Test Ban Treaty had just been passed. Everybody stood up in Salt Lake City, no, you know, liberal center, and gave him a standing ovation for 10 minutes. What's going on here?
They were downwind.
Yeah.
They were downwind. And they were also outside the Beltway.
Right.
A lot of people outside the Beltway had been terrified by the missile crisis, rightly so, as Kennedy and Khrushchev were. And when this new wind, not a downwind from the radiation, was going on, that was hope. That was hope. We don't remember this stuff. It's meant to be wiped out. Those who control the past control the future. Those who control the present control the past. Mr. Orwell had it down.
Can I add a tag?
Sure.
The person
sure.
who followed Pope John the 23rd in was James Angleton's asset. The well, guy who became Pope Paul.
Yeah,
he had been running since World War II.
Yeah. Yeah. So
kind of sad.
So yeah, we don't get too many saints as popes. Or as presidents either, for that matter. And John Kennedy was not a saint, but he was something else. You know what the term martyr means? It means witness. It means witness. He was a witness. With vision, he was a martyr. Not a saint, but he's a martyr. That's good enough for a president. Yeah, this is Don. Back that way. Yeah.
This is just a recording, Mike.
Oh. Thanks, Jim. This is purely speculative, but there was a lot of talk about Holmes this past election year.
Yeah.
And do you have any idea whether or not Obama might be aware of this work? I mean, there was an article a couple of months ago where Leon Panetta made some kind of strange remarks that sounded like he was aware of your book. I mean, Obama seems to be in the same situation that Kennedy was in.
Leon Panetta and I went to school together. We were friends.
Really? Are you serious?
We went to Santa Clara University together for 4 years, and we graduated in the same class, 1960. I liked him. Liked me, I think.
Have you sent him your book?
I did. I did send Leon a copy. A friend, I haven't seen Leon Panetta since 1960, let me be clear. I'm not going to destroy the security clearance with what I say. But when he was selected as the director of the CIA, a mutual friend of ours out at the Resource Center for Nonviolence in Santa Cruz, he called me and said, he was a good friend of Leon's, and he said he wanted to give him the book, and Sylvia, Leon's wife. They said, will you inscribe it for him? So I did, and he gave it to Sylvia Panetta for her and Leon. So. And Obama was given the book.
That was my question.
Well, it was, you know, a friend of a friend was at a rally, and I learned about this months later, and when Obama was walking out of the rally, he was shaking hands with people. He got a book. So he had to walk away with his book. What he did with the book, I don't think it's necessarily on his night table. But these people, but there's something a little bit hopeful here. You know a guy named Larry Wilkerson? Orange Wilkerson? Lawrence Wilkerson is the former chief of staff of Colin Powell, and he apparently read this thing, a friend, and he, a friend of mine, he had lunch together, and he was going on about this. Well, there was an article in Rolling Stone magazine 2 weeks, 3 weeks ago about Obama and the generals. It's a very important article. A guy who's a very good analyst of the situation in Washington, I read his article before in Rolling Stone, said that Obama was facing then and now rebellion by his generals. It's pretty obvious.
Yeah.
General McChrystal, he's supposed to be, you know, he's not supposed to be the president of the United States. He's supposed to be taking orders, and here he is lobbying for 60,000 American troops more. And Obama had actually told him, according to this article last August, that he didn't want him to make that recommendation. You know, and McChrystal not only makes the recommendation, he goes public with it. Well, you know, this is insubordination of a major nature. So I'm reading the article, and there's Lawrence Wilkerson being quoted in it. And the article ends with Lawrence Wilkerson being quoted in it, and he says, what Obama has to do is to face down his General McChrystal just the way that President John F. Kennedy faced down General Curtis LeMay in the Cuban Missile Crisis. That's what we need at this moment in history.
Wow.
That's what we need. So we got to keep telling this story, It does get through. It does get through to people at all kinds of levels, whether you went to school with them or not. You know, and I don't know how it gets through. All you got to do is just tell the story. This is a transforming story. And some people say, well, Obama's, you know, is terrified because he understands the implications of his power. That's quite possible. But Kennedy understood the implications of his power. He wasn't just terrified. He was inspired by what he could do with that, regardless of the consequences. And if we understand it sufficiently, the first time around, we got to understand it right now and get it far enough out ahead of this president so that, you know, as the people lead, the leader will follow and has a little bit of space because of us. That's the key. It's not Obama.
Thank you.
Tired old one, really. But I, as a researcher, I try to think linearly to piece it all together.
Yeah.
It seems to me, as a researcher, the beginning to the end of the Kennedy, in terms of the massive and extensive planning process of an assassination, you look at the intricacies of the assassination, and
yes.
etc., and we have to think that it started with the missile crisis. Is that completely gone from your mind? You think that maybe they would give him another chance? There was no real death mandate until just sometime maybe in the summer when I was like, oh God, I have to have a dream of the right. You know, I mean, is anything that struck you as the final of those 9 or 10 things that he was doing right? Do you have your own guesses if there was a determining one?
In my opinion, and this is only my opinion, I don't know. In my opinion, they had a profile on Kennedy before he became president of the United States. Before he became a president of the United States, they knew, I'm talking about the Central Intelligence Agency in particular, they knew he was a supporter of third world nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
That was a major, major theme in his campaign. No historian writes about this. There are hundreds of references in his campaign for his support for third world nationalism. It was his way also of saying, I'm a kind of supporter of civil rights. He wasn't coming right out and giving a big, of course he phoned to help Martin Luther King, and that signaled it in a big, big way. But he was a person who was sympathetic to Patrice Lumumba. And Patrice Lumumba was not assassinated after Kennedy became president, although Seymour Hersh said so in his book. He's absolutely wrong. Patrice Lumumba was assassinated days before, I think just a few days before Kennedy became president. And why was he assassinated at that time? So that he would not be imprisoned at a time when a man would become president of the United States who was sympathetic to Patrice Lumumba. There's a picture of Kennedy when he receives the news of Patrice Lumumba's assassination. We have it. It's on the cover of Richard Mahoney's book, a very fine book on Kennedy's African policy. You look at that picture, Kennedy is stricken at the very moment with kind of agony in his face when he hears on the phone that Patrice Lumumba has just been assassinated, because he felt that perhaps if he had spoken out as a presidential candidate on Lumumba, that wouldn't have happened. Kennedy took responsibility for all this stuff, including the assassination of Diem, which was being pushed, as you know, by other folks very, very heavily. He was trying to get Diem to do certain things that would avoid it. When you're president of the United States, these people in these certain positions, they don't just do what you say you want them to do. And Obama, of course, has that problem too. And so I think the profile of Kennedy was very high before he came in. I don't think the decision to assassinate him was made before he came in. But I think they had their eye on him from the moment he came into office. And when he's making remarks to Eisenhower, which indicate he wants to negotiate with Laos, even in his meeting with Eisenhower before he becomes president, he's asking questions of Eisenhower that already, you know, are a sign that he's going to negotiate peace in Laos rather than wage war with him, which is Eisenhower says there's no choice but to wage war in Laos. Kennedy says, oh, all right. And right away he negotiates peace. I didn't even include that one. That could have been a first Bay of Pigs, you know, right around the Bay of Pigs. He's negotiating peace with the communists in Laos for a neutralist government. There's all kinds of stuff that's been wiped out of the history that we have. Well, okay. Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah.